Welcome to Demand and Disrupt the Disability Podcast. Here, we will learn to advocate for ourselves and each other. This podcast is supported with funds from the Advocado Press, based in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to Demand and Disrupt. I'm your host, Kimberly Parsley.
And I'm Lisa McKinley. Today, we are speaking with Kevin Klein. He is a community engagement representative with Good Maps. Good Maps is an inclusive indoor navigation system that you use with an app on the phone. And Kevin travels across the United States sharing the product with others and kind of showing them how to use it. And it was an excellent interview. I enjoyed speaking with him so much. He lost his vision quite suddenly, and he's going to tell us about that and how transitioning from a totally sighted man to a blind man and learning the mobility, how it kind of all led him up to this career with Good Maps. And we're going to learn how Good Maps can help people with all different types of disabilities navigate independently in indoor spaces like airports, stadium halls, schools, universities, really anywhere that a company decides to set up the infrastructure for Good Maps. So that's going to be really neat.
That is amazing. And did you say he's based here in Kentucky?
Yes, actually the company is based here in Kentucky, and he was living in Kentucky for a while, but he's recently moved to Nashville, and he'll tell us about that in the interview too.
Awesome. I can't wait. Good Maps makes a lot of things more possible for people. A lot of navigation help with that.
Yes. And I told him I can't wait to, I'm usually turning down concert invites because I don't want to spend the money, but Good Maps is set up in Yum Center for the Yum Stadium in Louisville. I'm like, Now I'm not going to turn down the next offer because I want to go check out Good Maps.
I went there and had such fun, and I didn't think I was a concert person because, you know, noise and stuff. But I went to a concert there in November, and it was great. And they are the Yum Center is so good with people with disabilities. I mean, they really work great. There was a whole section for us, and it wasn't like far away. It was, but that was because I didn't pay for an expensive ticket, you know, but it was great. There were people there. Some people came up, they were like, look, when I bought the ticket, I was fine, but now I've broken my leg, so I need, you know, a different seat. And they had no problem with that. They were really great, really great. And on the way from that accessibility desk to the place where accessible seating, I think we passed maybe 10 bourbon vendors. So, there was that.
Who did you go see?
I saw Pink.
Pink. Yes. Oh, I hear she does a really good concert.
She flew.
I guess she flies. Great. I guess you didn't get, I mean, I, you still got to experience that in your own way.
I did. And, it was fun. I went with a friend of mine, and our daughters are best friends. So it was four girls, and it was really great. It really was nice.
Oh my gosh. I bet they really loved that. Let me tell you what we did recently, and people will think it's completely crazy. At least for me. As you know, we had a partial solar eclipse here in Bowling Green.
Right. Yeah, on April 8th, right.
Yes, and for everyone who has seen both a partial solar eclipse and a total solar eclipse, they will tell you a partial eclipse does not at all compare to a full total solar eclipse. So we put the boys in the car, and we took them down to Indiana, to a little town called Mount Vernon, Indiana, where there was full totality for almost 4 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I want to tell you, it was the neatest experience, even though I couldn't see it. It was just, well, I'll take that back. The actual moment of totality was pretty cool, but we were down on the river and there was a band. They hired a band to play. And they had bouncy houses and snow cones and all this stuff. But they hired a heavy metal band and it was terrible. I'm like, why? This is a family friendly event. Why heavy metal? It was, oh, so I was fuming inside because I'm like, I hope they stop for the actual eclipse. Like, cause
Did they?
I wanted, yes.
Oh, like, good. Okay.
A few minutes before totality, I hear the leader of the band say, and now we're going to take a break and look towards the skies. And I was like, yes. I was so happy they stopped.
So if you couldn't see it, tell me what you experienced with it.
Okay. So we got there about an hour before totality. And so basically an hour before and an hour after is when you're experiencing the sun moving, or the moon rather, moving in across the sun, and then the moon. Then there's the moment of totality, and then the moon moves away. And so as the moon is moving in, the skies get darker and darker. Of course, I could not experience that, but what I did notice was the temperature. It started to drop, and the winds started to pick up. And
wow, huh?
I don't know if you've ever noticed this, and I've never heard anyone else talk about it. But as a blind person and really paying attention to the sounds outside, I can tell when the birds, I can tell the time of day by the sound of the birds. They have a morning song, they have an afternoon song, and they have an evening way of singing. And they're all three different. And so as the moon was coming in that hour, as it was slowly coming in to cross over the sun, I heard the birds go from afternoon song to their evening song, because the skies were mimicking, or not mimic, the skies were doing basically what they do as it's turning dusk. So the birds started to calm down a little and their song was a little softer. And then when it reached totality, there was more of a chill in the air. The birds completely stopped. There were frogs. The frogs started going because we were on the river, and I was like, "So cool!"
And that is cool.
And then as the moon started moving away, the birds started singing again, but it sounded like 5 a.m. in the morning the way they were singing. And you know, within 10 or 15 minutes, they were back to normal. And that's, to me, it was really cool noticing all of that.
That it's like time lapse audio, huh?
Yes, it was time lapse audio, and I also enjoy just listening to my husband and my two boys, their reactions and them describing it to me. It was super neat.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. That does sound like fun. That way more fun than I had. We walked out in the back door of my office, and my coworker was like, "Yep, getting kind of dark," and that was about it. so you, that sounds like such a cool experience. But yeah, I go to the zoo with my kids, and of course, I can't touch any of the things. And you know, rarely do you get to. I mean, you can hear the birds, but you know, most of the animals aren't making a noise. But it's their reactions. You know, it's them telling me about stuff, and you know, that kind of thing is fun. So yeah,
it's just listening and hearing their reactions. Like at Christmas, I love hearing them open the presents and saying what they got when they were little.
But it's okay, so fun to. Yeah. It is fun to do stuff, even stuff. I mean, I think disabled people do more stuff than people think, that we enjoy more things than I think they think we can, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And I hear you have some news from the Department of Transportation.
I do. I'm going to, there's a new rule proposed about airlines and how they handle wheelchairs and mobility devices. And I want to share that with our listeners.
The U.S. Department of Transportation is seeking public comments on a new proposed rule designed to ensure airline passengers who use wheelchairs can travel safely and with dignity. An estimated 5.5 million Americans use wheelchairs, and many encounter barriers when it comes to air travel. In 2023, over 11,000 wheelchairs and scooters were mishandled by carriers required to report data to the Department of Transportation. The proposed rule would set new standards for prompt, safe, and dignified assistance, require enhanced training for airline employees and contractors who physically assist passengers with disabilities and handle passengers' wheelchairs, and specific action that airlines must take to protect passengers when a wheelchair is damaged during transport. Notably, the proposed rule would require airlines to provide passengers with two options to repair or replace their wheelchairs if mishandled by the airline. The two options are: the carrier handles the repair and replacement of the wheelchair with one that has equivalent or greater function and safety within reasonable time frame and pays the associated cost. Or the passenger arranges the repair or replacement of a wheelchair with one that is equivalent or greater function and safety through their preferred vendor, and airline pays the associated costs. In addition, the proposed rule will make it easier for Department of Transportation to hold airlines accountable when they damage or delay the return of a wheelchair to its owner by making it an automatic violation of the Air Carrier Access Act to mishandle wheelchairs. As part of the notice of proposed rulemaking, Department of Transportation is also requiring input on two topics not currently included in the proposal: lavatory size on twin aisle aircrafts and reimbursement of fare differences between flights someone could have taken if their wheelchair fit in the aircraft and the more expensive flight they had to take instead. Comments can be submitted online, by mail or fax, or hand delivered through Monday, May 13th, 2024.
And now here is the amazing, fabulous Kevin Klein. Thank you for joining us today. Today I am speaking with Kevin Klein, Community Engagement Representative with Good Maps. Good Maps is a company providing indoor navigation to the blind and visually impaired. It is an amazing company, and not only does Kevin get to represent this company and travel around the U.S., he also has an amazing story of triumph. I know a lot of people would have not been as tenacious as Kevin under similar circumstances, but Kevin has overcome, and he is here to tell us more about that story and a little more about Good Maps. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for the great introduction. You know, hopefully I can shed a little light on my past life, if you will, and then what I'm doing now.
Yes, when I first, heard your story and heard about the things you were doing, I was like, wow, I've got to talk to him, more in depth sometime. So I'm so glad you joined us on the program today. So if you would start by telling us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So like you said, I'm Kevin Klein, and I work with Good Maps in the community engagement role, which we do accessible indoor navigation for anyone now, and I'll get more into that later. But I now live in Nashville, Tennessee. I've lived in Bowling Green, Kentucky for a few years and was raised in Western Kentucky. So kind of stayed in this area for most of my life. And I'm 28, and I lost my vision about 5.5 years ago now, I guess.
Oh, wow. If you don't mind, share a little about that with us.
Yeah, so up until, 23 years old, I had 20/20 vision. Lived a relatively normal life, played sports and went to college and had multiple different jobs and careers, thoughts on what I was going to do for the rest of my life. When I was in Bowling Green, I was working at UPS, and the goal was to become a driver shortly after working there, and things like that. Everything was somewhat figured out. And then I guess it would be August of 2018. I was watching a game at a restaurant there in town and realized the score was looking a little blurry, but didn't think much of it. I was like, well, I haven't been to the optometrist in probably 10 years, so I guess it might be time to go get glasses or something like that. So a little time goes by, and I was driving there in town, and I went off the road just slightly, didn't crash or anything like that, but that wasn't normal for me. And so I made an appointment, went to an optometrist there in Bowling Green, and within about an hour, they said, "You need to go to Nashville. We can't help you here." And immediately I'm like, "Well, that's very odd. I've never had any type of eye issues, no major health scares or anything like that." So went down to Nashville. Actually went to the wrong. They sent me to the wrong doctor. It was a They sent me to a retina specialist, which I don't have a retina problem. I have a optic nerve issue. It's Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy. And so basically they were running tests at this other doctor, and they were kind of, I found out a couple months later, as I was losing my vision over the next 6 months, that they were kind of waiting to see if I could be a guinea pig for them, run tests, things like that. Well, once I figured out that, I did some research and got recommended to go to Vanderbilt. And about, by the fifth month out of 6 months of losing my vision, I got into a clinical trial in maybe December of 2018, maybe January, but of 2019. But it helped me slightly, but everything with LHON is still in trials. There's no, cure. If they catch it quickly, then they can kind of reverse it somewhat with some of the trials. But I wasn't that lucky because I was waiting around for multiple months. But by January 2019 into February, I was probably at my worst vision wise, and then the shots helped me regain slight contrast, but not much. I could still see light, but other than that, nothing. I like to tell people I'm pretty blind. I'm
You're
pretty
pretty
much blind.
blind.
So you get into the low vision, into blindness, and people want to ask what's your level of sight and all this. And I didn't really get that because I went from 20/20 to blind in the course of 6 months. So they're always asking me acuity and things like that, and I'm like, I got no idea. I don't see much. How about that? So, and from 2019, it was kind of a lot of, hoping, oh, it's going to come back at some point, but it never did. And that first year or two, it was pretty rough to go through that at my age, and while everybody else's lives continue the same, and continue their regular course, if you will.
I can only imagine. So this just came on very suddenly with no warning. I take it there was no one else in your family that you knew of with this disorder.
No, and that's the funny thing is I'm adopted actually, so didn't even know, which we ended up, my family reached out to my birth mother, and come to find out she had no idea she was a carrier. The disease is normally passed on from a mother to a son. Well, I'm pretty sure I have two birth brothers, and neither one of them were affected. And so I just got lucky, or however you want to put it, unlucky. But I was, I guess, chosen to get this. But yeah, there was no signs of it ever going to happen, and had no clue it would ever happen to me. So it was very surprising.
I can only imagine, and at such a young age, but you still had so much life, and you still have so much life ahead of you. And do you think
that in some ways helped propel you forward to continue, you know, striving to understand and to adjust to life as a blind person?
Yeah, it definitely did, but it took time to get to that point. Probably, like I said, about a year and a half, I was in a pretty dark mental state and, you know, didn't really, I didn't even know how to learn to be blind, didn't have a cane and nothing like that. I was just holding on to people walking around town if I ever left the apartment, and, you know, didn't really, wasn't taking care of myself and all that good stuff that comes with the darkness. And so I don't know what it necessarily was, but, you know, within that year and a half to 2 years, kind of hit a point where I was like, I need to change things. I've still got a lot of, like, this isn't going to get better. The hopes and prayers are nice, but it doesn't mean that it's going to change. And so I kind of hit a mental point where I had to change some stuff and learn to be blind, and then learn what you can do as a blind individual, which I'm still learning that as I go on. But yeah, it took that. And then, like you said, the age, you know, being at this point, probably 24, maybe 25, and knowing, you know, you still have a whole life ahead of you. I was at 24 years old. You, most people hope to have a whole another, you know, 50 to something years left to live their life and have children and get married, all that good stuff. So kind of took a toll on me at the beginning, but, you know, you gotta, and not everybody hits that mental point of changing, because it just takes time and everybody's different. I got lucky that I did it within a couple of years instead of waiting any longer.
Right. It's such an adjustment period for everyone. And there are definitely dark days. And when I talk to a newly visually impaired person, it's kind of challenging because, you know, I tell them you have to go through this, you know, it's kind of a depression, and there's no way to rush it, and you don't want to rush it. And sadly, sometimes people get stuck there. So I'm so glad that you didn't get stuck there, and, you know, you decided, okay, there's life to live. I got to get out there and figure out how to live life blind. So can you tell us a little what that was like, really making that adjustment?
Yeah, so fortunately, when I decided to, you know, really go full force into learning how to be blind and live that type of life, COVID hit. So that was fun. You know, there's all this information and assistance and trainings that I didn't know existed, but I was excited to try and learn. And then everything shut down, and they wanted to, you know, trying to learn a computer over the phone with seven other people through Zoom was not ideal for me. You know, learning Braille over the phone was not working for me, things like that. But I was able to learn the phone pretty well by myself and with a little bit of assistance from instructors. But that's kind of what helped that, and mixed with the mobility skills that I've learned, or still learning. But I've gotten pretty well with, you know, walking anywhere that I feel necessary, you know, traveling, things like that. But if you're able to use that phone to your complete ability, that's a game changer. You know, I'm currently still learning the MacBook now, that every week I get a little bit of training. But it's, you know, it took time, but it was one of those things that I joke with people, saying in high school, well, I didn't do great at Spanish because I didn't want to learn Spanish. But, you know, if you want to learn something, it's a lot easier when you have that interest, and, you know, your life depends on it, if you will.
Yes. And the mobility thing, learning how to use the cane and the apps on the phone for navigation, that's kind of what got you into this position at Good Maps, isn't it?
Yeah, somewhat. So, you know, I couldn't even walk a straight line when I first lost some vision. I still run into walls. That's just because I don't pay attention. But, you know, the cane is a life changer. And, as I was getting mobility instruction, I was learning of some applications. And, once you hear about it, you want to kind of go try it out. I guess I'll back up a little bit to see how I get, to where I am now. But I was, in some of the organizations, which are very helpful no matter where you are, you're going to be able to find an ACB or an FB organization in your city or region. They're all throughout all 50 states. So they're great to, get a hold of because they can tell you at least where the resources are, show you people that are successful as a blind individual, which was a big thing for me, was finding people that are living life, the way I kind of want to. And so my girlfriend at the time, wife now, she had moved down to Nashville, and I had some instruction under my belt and some training, but I was like, man, if I could get in a big city where there's even more opportunities. So I moved down here to Nashville, and there I joined the ACB and NFB and just tried to meet as many people as possible, and also getting technology training and mobility training here too in the big city environment is a big difference too. So I did all of that, and I come to find out there's, I'd never been to, at this point, I hadn't been to an NFB meeting or anything like that in town, but I saw that there was a career fair in New Orleans at the NFB convention, and it happened to be over my birthday, so I called up a buddy and I said, hey, let's go to New Orleans. And I'd never been. I wouldn't suggest going in July. Pretty hot, pretty humid, but it was a good time. But what was the best part was I met people from Nashville that were, very successful in their own rights. And also, I went to the career fair where I met my boss, Evelyn, at GoodMaps. And, I'd met a lot of people there, and I actually, we ended up going to, we had been at the same university near the same time, which was just a coincidence. And they, we had mutual friends, things like that, but had good conversation, and that was about it. And that was in 2022. So I didn't hear anything from anyone at the career fair then. And this was in July. So I was working with the state here in Boca Rehab, and I ended up getting a job in a warehouse in September. And I don't know if this is a coincidence, but it seems like there's always something that happens bad in your life, but good comes out of it. And right around that same time, my mother had passed in September, and then I started a new job like a couple of weeks later. So, and same with the blindness, like there's always. It's not a good thing. It's not fun. It's not something you look forward to, but good can come out of it. So that happened, and I was like, well, warehouse work isn't necessarily what I want to do, but I want to make my own money again. Like having some type of independence and contributing to the household is kind of my internal goal. So I did that, and it was going okay. And working in a semi trailer for 8 months, give or take. And then come June of 2023, I got reached out to by a couple people saying, hey, this lady's looking for you, like trying to find who you are. She works with GoodMaps, and she remembered you from the career fair. So luckily, after a few interviews and meeting up, ended up being able to quit that warehouse job and take on the community engagement role at GoodMaps. And it's been a life changer in multiple ways, but just being able to communicate and network with a lot of people with the same interests as I do, visual loss, blindness. I've even been in contact with, deaf organizations, things like that. Just a whole lot of other people that I never thought I'd meet, and travel and all that good stuff. So it's came full circle, and I kind of preach about every bad thing has something good on the other side. So this is definitely, I wouldn't have been in this position. I joke with everyone at GoodMaps saying, well, it's because I'm blind and I can talk to people, right? And that's why you hired me. But it might not be 100% true, but it probably did have some effect. And if I wasn't blind, maybe I wouldn't have this job. So it comes full circle.
Well, you saw that there was the career fair. It's kind of far from Nashville. You took that chance. I think that's important to, point out to listeners. We have to take the chance. Sitting around isn't going to get us very far, but you took that chance. You went out, you found the career fair, and the fact that they reached out to you, I think that just goes to show, speaks so much about your character and confidence at that event. You must have just, you were someone they wanted on the payroll. So I think that's so great.
Yeah, I was surprised too. It was a great opportunity to be able to, have someone reach out to me instead of, like we all know how it is trying to find a job when you don't have one or trying to find something new, just, constantly reaching out to everybody else. Well, it's a game changer when they reach out to you for the first time.
Absolutely. And if you would kind of tell us about Good Maps and what is it that, what kind of services do they provide?
Yeah, so Good Maps, it's been evolving, but it's to where it is right now, it is now an inclusive and accessible for all application when it comes to indoor navigation. But we started out of a American Printing House for the Blind out about 2019, and the goal was to make indoor navigation accessible for the blind and low vision. With American Printing House being our parent company, that's of course, main goal is, blind low vision, which was great, and we exceeded with that with our previous app, Good Maps Explore. And we, as we were expanding, they were getting questions like, "Well, if you can do this for the blind low vision, why can't you do it for everyone? Or why can't you do it with the deaf or the, wheelchair users that might be around or neurodiverse, things like that?" So, we worked on that. I say we, the people that are smarter than me and the development team and the mapping team, they worked on on new app, which now was released in end of October of last year. It is, like I said, it's an inclusive app now and accessible for blind, low vision, deaf, neurodiverse, wheelchair users, people who just get lost. I joke with people when I had 20/20, I still couldn't find my classes on my college campus. So, it helps everyone, but it has an augmented reality aspect now. So it's got the arrows as you're walking through. It's got a visual map, full directory of whatever points of interest, locations you want to go to in that venue. And, it's free to the user. The venue will pay towards getting the application in their, building. But yeah, it comes with unlimited usage, say in an airport or things like that. So, where we are, we're in about seven different countries at the moment, and I think it might be eight soon. But a lot of transit, such as Portland International Airport, Network Rail in London, all of their stations. We've got a Bolivian airport. We've got Sound Transit up in Seattle, the BART in San Francisco, and then universities such as Michigan State University, Louisville, Wichita State, and a few others. Schools for the Blind, of course, are, we have about seven partners there. Museums, and we're starting to talk to some arenas and stadiums. Hopefully that will happen soon. We will see. And we've got a already arena wise, we have the KFC Yum Center in Louisville, and a large basketball arena. And we're talking, there's a couple of large airports in the US that are might be coming on board very shortly. So keep your eyes out for that. And then we're growing in Canada in the corporate space, like Deloitte. I was able to go up there in Toronto last fall when I first started. And we're looking to just make any space that's not available for anyone with a disability to walk through by themselves, trying to make it as accessible as possible. And luckily it's starting to look like a lot of businesses and corporations and universities want that as well. The focus, I think, even in transit in the UK area, they're starting to put it into some of their writing that it needs to be, there needs to be, accessible wayfinding through the facilities and things like that. Whether that's good maps or not, it's still good that, people are focusing in on it. Because, I mean, for instance, I was at CSUN Assistive Tech Conference a few weeks ago in Anaheim, California, and we had the Marriott there, their lobby mapped out. I was able to, walk through from my room. I'd take the elevator and open Good Maps at the bottom, and I'd walk to the Starbucks every morning and then walk to wherever I needed to go in that area by myself, and then call my coworker and say, "Hey, I'm here if you want to come meet me." And
Could you explain how Good Maps would work, in particularly for a visually impaired user, how they would use the voiceover option on their phone? Because I think that probably messes with a lot of people's mind. How can a
Oh yeah, so I
blind
can.
person use a phone and see a map? Because they're not actually seeing the map, correct?
Right. No. So, for instance, I can kind of run through a little bit of the different features for each type of person. But VoiceOver is what we use on the phone to swipe through. It announces everything that's on the phone. Well, our app actually will announce without you having to type. If you click a route that you want to go to, for instance, if you want to go to the water fountain, it'll give you turn by turn directions, audio wise as well for the blind low vision. It'll say you're approaching a left turn in 13 feet, and then it'll tell you when to turn, and it'll say, a slight left here, or things of that nature. Without you just have to hold that phone up, because our app, I will say this, I've kind of skipped over it. Our app works off the phone camera. So I know a lot of people have heard about the Bluetooth beacons and GPS. Well, we use LiDAR technology, which is kind of a 360 imagery. And we go in, we scan a building, and then your phone camera will, like, I always use the word compare, but basically compare what it sees to our previous scan. And this helps with the accuracy. Bluetooth beacons are anywhere from 18 to 40 feet accurate, give or take, some better, some worse. But there's installation, there's facilities have to install things, replace batteries, all that good stuff. And then we there's no installation for the facilities on our side. We go in, we scan, we leave, and we put it on our app, and we get you within a couple of feet of your destination. And GPS, as we all know, that's great outdoors. It's a great tool, but you'll still be in an Uber sometimes and get dropped off down the street. And it's not the driver's fault. It's just there's a little inconsistency with that system. But that's a side note on how it works. So I kind of ran over that earlier and forgot. But so that's kind of how the with the blind low vision, you can use VoiceOver that the phone comes with, or TalkBack on Android, and swipe through to go over the tabs and click where you want to go and things like that. But there will be audio directions without you having to touch anything. Once you've started the route, you'll just hold the phone up and start walking, and it'll announce where you want to go, or like how far you will go till you turn, and how far you are from your destination and things like that. And then when it comes to the deaf and low hearing and things like that, so we've got, like I said, the augmented reality. And also, it'll text at the top to show you, or to tell the user where they're going as they're going, so they don't have to try and go communicate with someone who may not know sign language or may not know how to communicate with a deaf individual. And that's a large thing with the neurodiverse community as well. It may not be that they can't hear or they can't see or anything like that. They just may not be comfortable speaking to someone that they don't know, or just, sometimes people just don't want to talk to you, and that's fine too. So we can help facilitate that. And when it comes to the wheelchair users, we have a feature that's called step-free routing. So we go into the, you can go into the settings and click step-free, and any route that you're taking, whether it's, from the first to the third or whatever floor, it'll take you, if you're in the airport, it'll skip any stairs, escalators, and take you straight to the nearest elevator, and or the correct elevator on your route.
But I can't imagine how frustrating it would be to try to navigate a building and you get to where you want to be, and then there's steps, and then you have to turn around and reroute. You all are saving people from that hassle, and it must be a great time saver, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, I mean, I can't. Well, I guess I can't imagine in a sense, but never, always having to try and find the elevator when everybody else is able to take one route down the stairs quickly and things like that. You know, you're already having to go slower than everyone else while waiting on the elevator to come up, but no less trying to find it. You know, so, and that's kind of our biggest thing right now is it's great that we're helping everybody at once. You know, of course, that's our main goal is the accessibility for all. You know, the blind and vision was our main thing. We've already got that taken care of. Let's do it for everybody else. But also it helps when speaking to venues and organizations. You know, everybody wants to help the blind and vision, but say there's only three blind people that come in that venue every, you know, 6 months. You know, trying to get the those people to buy into the app if it only helps a few people. But if you say, oh, we're accessible for everyone, and you'll have a map of your location that you may not have had before, or if you did, for instance, a shopping mall, a lot of those maps are out there, but they're not accessible. And so, you know, we're able to say we've got a map of your location, and it's accessible for anybody walking or rolling into your spot.
That's great. Absolutely. You need to give it as much broad appeal as possible, and that's what will help the technology get into more places. So what is in the future for Good Maps? Is there anything new on the horizon that you all would like to do?
I think right now our we've been focused in on transit and airports because they honestly made the most sense, but they also have been interested in us. But like I said, we're in all types of places. We're going to continue to try and be in universities and museums, all that. But I think kind of a cool side of things for me, because I'm a huge sports fan, is trying to get into some sports venues. Why not? You know, that's where, you know, even if you don't have a disability, I know when I wanted to, you know, run to the restroom or something when I had vision, I wanted to know where it was so I can get there quick and not miss a big play or miss part of a concert or, you know, something like that. And a lot of big places like that, they want the maps in general, and come to find out it's helpful for everybody too. So it's just a plus. So that's a cool thing that we're in talks about right now is, sporting venues, concerts, things like that, but also, you know, just continuously moving across the world, but also state by state too. So, and, you know, as my title, community engagement, I'm here to kind of spread the word and, you know, let people know across the U.S. specifically for me, you know, where are you at? Where might you want this application? We can't go map out a Starbucks or a Subway because it just doesn't logistically make sense for us or the venue. But, you know, if there's anything like that in your area you want to advocate for and whatnot, just, you know, reach out to us. We're open to talk with anybody. Whether it makes sense or not, we'll find out for you.
So, Kevin, we spoke about your transition from having vision to the vision loss, the transition of you learning to live as a quote-unquote blind person, and it seems mobility and having freedom to move around your environment really helped you really regain your confidence. And I wonder if you would kind of tie the two together with Good Maps and other similar programs. How important is it for a disabled person, be it them in a wheelchair or visually impaired or hearing impaired? Tell us, how important do you think it is to be mobile and stay mobile and really try to achieve that in your life?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, you have to. And it's one of those things I always tell people, So good maps, we call it a tool in a tool belt. Have as many tools in your tool belt as possible. Don't be scared to leave the house like I was for that little bit of time. You know, I'll be testing with people with the app, and they're like, oh, you know, they might be scared to hold their phone up because people might steal it or something like that. I'm like, well, you're out and about. You're doing pretty good right now. Like, I wouldn't worry about your phone being stolen. You're doing great. You can just have the confidence and, you know, be able to walk around. You know, like I was in Seattle a month or two ago, and I'll be able to walk around the station by myself, whether I was using the app or not, is just a, you know, life changer. Get back. There's nobody's normal, but get back to a normal sense in your mind that you can go to the grocery store by yourself. You can, you know, continue education. You can go to a concert or, you know, things like that, where you're still living your life in the way that you want. It's not going to be the same as before. You know, when you lost your vision, it's not going to be the same when you had sight, but you can still do the same things that you did before, just in a different way. And, you know, having the confidence to do so is the biggest thing. You know, I'll shout that to the rooftops with confidence, because that's the main thing that helped me with mobility. Is, you know, I could, you know, at the beginning when I started learning a cane, I knew how to use a cane, but I didn't go out and do it because I was scared or I had fear or nervous, which are all understandable. But taking that first step out the door, you know, walking around the neighborhood, or, you know, getting an Uber down to the city and being able to just walk around to a restaurant that you like, or, you know, things like that. Once you start doing that, you'll get more comfortable. People, you know, you'll realize people will want to help you if you need it. Sometimes it's too much. Sometimes people don't know how to help, but that's okay too. At least they're trying. And, you know, once you start doing that, you'll realize there's a lot more good in the world than being worried about, you know, walking around with your phone or whatever to be stolen. You'll realize there's a lot more good than bad when it comes to people seeing you out and about with that white cane. There's some advantages of the cane, I'll say that. So,
and I don't know if you were anything like me, and I want to kind of speak to listeners out there who might be in that transition where they're not using the cane yet. I remember when I was losing my vision and going from the point where I could no longer walk safely without assistance and I had to use the cane. I didn't want to identify. I felt the cane made me identify as a blind person, and you fight that for a while and you don't want to take out that cane. But you, once you take out the cane and start to use it, and you realize, oh my gosh, I was trying to depend on something that wasn't dependable for so long. Now I have this cane, this tool, and it just provides so much freedom. And before you know it, you're just whipping out that cane with confidence. You know how the cane folds. I don't. Do you ever just take the elastic off and you just whip it out because you know people are watching, and it provides this sense of confidence instead of this sense of shame that you might have felt in the very beginning.
Yeah, and it's almost funny because I do understand, you know, I went through that whole stage and it took me a long time, like I said, a couple of years. But now looking back, it's funny because I cannot imagine what I looked like when I was trying to walk around without a cane, because I do know I was in my small town and hometown in Kentucky about a year into losing my vision, didn't have a cane or anything like that. And I was just walking around. I think there was a small concert or something downtown, and people thought I was just hammered drunk. And I was like, I get stopped, like, are you okay? And I'm like turning around, I'm like, I'm fine. Like, I'm really sober. What is going on? And people look at you that way because they don't know you're blind. And, you know, I have sometimes a joking, I guess, way I talk. And so I'd say to people, I don't know, like, in the tone of my voice, it sounded like I was joking, and I wasn't. You know, it was hard to explain. Yes, I am blind. How are you going to prove it? Nobody asks questions when you got a white cane.
Exactly.
They They get it. I joke. I'll be walking around with buddies at an airport or, at a sporting event, and people part like the Red Sea. And if they don't, and accidentally run into you, they say sorry. Like, and that's good. It's funny. Like it's, but people are almost amazed at you. And it's kind of cool to see that, but also cool to prove them, hey, this shouldn't be amazing. This should just be normal. And
Yes,
just
absolutely.
living your life should be normal, but it's getting those people that don't understand to understand. And also, that goes from the sighted or the blind individuals who don't understand what it's like to use the cane and be mobile and just have confidence while doing so.
Well, Kevin, you have an amazing story. You've went out there, you've made a way, you're making things more accessible for lots of people across the nation and hopefully across the world. And I commend you for it. And I thank you for being on the program. It's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it, and hopefully everybody that listens to this will look up good maps and see what we're about.
Absolutely. And we will link it to the show notes. Thanks again, Kevin.
If you like the podcast, remember to follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you really like the podcast, we'd love it if you could leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That helps more people to find us. If you really, really like the podcast, then please tell someone about it, either in person or send them an email or just share the link on social media. Thank you all. Every bit helps and it makes a huge difference for us. If you'd like a transcript, please send us an email to demandanddisrupt@gmail.com and put transcript in the subject line. Thanks to Steve Moore for helping us out with transcripts. Thanks to Chris Unken for our theme music. Demand and Disrupt is a publication of the Advocado Press with generous support from the Center for Accessible Living located in Louisville, Kentucky. And you can find links to buy the book, A Celebration of Family, Stories of Parents with Disabilities, in our show notes. Thanks, everyone.
You say you've seen a change in me. Just for once, I think I would agree. We both know there's a difference. We've had our curtain call. and every letter.